Welcome to episode 10 of Neuro Women Natter with me, Charlie Hart, and Tony Horn. And
morning.
Due to the success of last month's reading out stories from other neurodivergent women who've emailed us in, we're going to read two more. So, quick image description for you. As usual, we're working in our home offices, and Tony and I both have glasses on and our hair half up. And vest tops, because it's absolutely sweltering. So hope you're keeping cool and hydrated wherever you are. So I'm going to read, you'd think that I would have the email open ready, wouldn't you? But no, that would be way too organised. I'm going to read you got yours. I feel like we're really disorganised and flying by the seat of our pants today, but yeah. I'm going to read from Angela Greenwell, and she says, I've been reflecting a lot on how late diagnosed ADHD has shaped the way I've approached life, creativity, and identity. Oh, this is my favourite topic. I've always had an entrepreneurial spirit. For as long as I can remember, I've dreamed of building something that was mine. I've dabbled in all kinds of side businesses over the years, photography, an outdoor adventure training to empower girls, flower farming, and other creative pursuits that felt exciting and full of potential. And yet, I often ended up lost, scattered, or unsure why I couldn't make them stick. What I didn't know at the time was that I had ADHD. Before my diagnosis, I couldn't always tell the difference between an aligned opportunity and a compelling distraction. I didn't know how to name the patterns of intensity and losing focus that I kept cycling through. I didn't have the language for why I lit up at the start of things, but struggled to carry them across the finish line, or why some things felt deeply resonant and others quickly drained me. I often would then spend years internalizing either having big goals is bad or wanting more than something average is bad. Getting diagnosed gave me more than a label. It gave me discernment. It helped me understand what went wrong in all those past endeavors, not because I wasn't capable, but because I didn't yet know how to work with my brain. I could finally see the patterns for what they were, not personal failures, but predictable ADHD blind spots, like starting fast and then fizzling out, following every spark, or setting big goals without the structure to sustain them. That understanding gave me something I hadn't felt in a long time, permission to dream again. This time, not out of desperation or pressure to prove myself, but from a grounded place of clarity and self-trust. Now, I know how to tell the differences between what's aligned and what's just adrenaline now. I know how to build supports around the parts that still trip me up, and I've learned how to pursue big, meaningful goals without abandoning myself to do it. That's what led me to the work I do now. I trained as a certified coach through IPEC, IPEC is it, in 2019, before I was diagnosed. After spending about 3 years really understanding my ADHD brain and past and applying what I learned to my corporate job, I now work with other ADHD professionals, parents and teens who are navigating the same tension that I lived for so long between potential and pressure, between too much and not enough, between dreaming big and burning out. This work feels deeply aligned, not because it's perfect, but because it lets me bring my whole self to the table, messy, visionary, non-linear, and finally at peace with how my brain moves through the world. Thank you for holding space for neurodivergent women to be seen in all their depth. Warmly, Angela Greenwell. I read that fine until I got right to the end and then I got her surname wrong. Yeah, Angela Greenwell, thank you very much. So she's an ADHD leadership coach and founder. Her company's called Trail Blossom, and she helps parents, professionals and teens thrive with ADHD. So there was a lot of relatable stuff to me in that. Yeah. Considering how recently you and I were both diagnosed with ADHD. Yeah. We haven't really talked about your ADHD epiphany, have we, much?
No. But
I just want to touch on a couple of things in Angela's email that really rang true to me. So she's talking about her spirit and building things and dabbling in all kinds of side businesses. So I've done that for a really long time. And there is a bit of a compulsion, I think. You think of something shiny and new that you really want to do. And like, for instance, I think it was 2017, one wet Easter holiday, when I found out about painted rocks. Somebody on the village Facebook page had said, is anyone doing that thing where you paint rocks and hide them around the village for the kids to find? And I thought, oh, I like that idea. I've never been an artist, but I found a load of pebbles. I bought the varnish. I bought the Posca paints. I created a Facebook page and started to drive engagement in that. And I painted about 50 rocks that Easter holiday. So this is one I did later, actually. It's the only one I've got to hand. But this is a painted marble river rock, which has got an inside-out rainbow on it. It's got R.I.P. Iggy, because I painted it for Iggy. And it says different is okay at the bottom. So I accidentally painted the rainbow inside out and I was going to start again. And Z said, no, it's okay. It's different and different is okay, which is where my hashtag different is okay came from. But that summer I painted every day and some days until I was getting a sore neck and sore shoulders and a bad back. One day I painted a massive dragon's egg and I sprayed way too much varnish on it and it really badly affected my lungs. And now I have a lot of acrylic paint and varnish and materials, which I never look at because I thrive on novelty. And when something starts to get boring and feel like a chore, then it just becomes an abandoned project and a clutter pile. And I think every single ADHDer I know has told me a similar story. So how about you?
Yeah, no, again, coming back to that. So I always put, because I do think sometimes ADHD traits overlap with dyslexia, you know, like the unorganized, the working memory, et cetera, et cetera. So I never really thought about me as an ADHDer. But obviously with the work that I do, Charlie, it become more and more apparent that there's these little things that kept creeping in. And I was speaking to my husband about it. And again, obviously me starting the business, originally it was Think Differently Coaching, and then it moved to Think Differently with Us. And now it's Neuro Empower, which I'm sticking with, by the way. Yeah. Neuro Empower is staying. But he said to me, like, you know, when you worked for a large organization, you were flicking through jobs, like you'd get promoted because you wanted to do something different, because I could see you getting really bored doing one role. And I think when I was a relationship manager, I got bored quite easily until I met a new client. I had a new client, I had someone new and shiny to work with, yes. Right? But even now, you know, if you look at this, Dave's like, okay, so you've gone from absolutely hating education to now doing a level 4 in workplace needs assessments, which you don't need because you've got people doing it for you. Or, you know, you've got your PG cert in kindness and wellbeing, and you've just done your level 4 in supporting children and young people with social, emotional, mental health. And I'm doing something else as well at the minute. And he's like, You can't seem to just stop.
Do you get dopamine rush from the sense of achievement of completing something like that, yeah, having struggled absolutely. At school? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I really do. And it was quite funny because when I got my diagnosis, when did I get diagnosed with ADHD?
Was it recently, wasn't it?
7 weeks ago?
Yeah.
Must have been 7-8 weeks ago. But you always
did. Anyone who's ever met you could have peer diagnosed you, to be fair.
Yeah. But I didn't think I had the combined. And I was really surprised when she said you got combined ADHD. And I was like, really? I don't think I'm really hyperactive. And then she said, just walk me through all the things that you've told me that you've done throughout your young adulthood. You're like, Tony, you've jumped out of airplanes, not for charity, because you wanted to. You've done paragliding, you did rock climbing, all these things that are dopamine hitting, kind of seeking.
High adrenaline.
High adrenaline. Which goes with, and I was like, oh, maybe I am combined.
Yeah. And it's the kind of things that don't sit neatly in the autistic profile as well.
Exactly.
We're typically more risk averse. And
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's why it's hard to diagnose both, because the one can mask the other. I get up on stage and I'm really confident speaking in front of people. So that's my ADHD, I think, and being a drama kid. But that would make my autism harder to spot, because I can perform anything, including normal, to a certain extent.
Do you always get the question? I always get asked, do you get nervous before you do a keynote in front of loads of people? And my answer is no.
I get nervous about the networking.
Yes. The small talk coming off, before going on stage, I literally hide myself away in a corner. Yeah. Don't talk to anybody. The minute I come off stage, it's not so bad, because people are asking me questions about the content, which I feel really comfortable with.
So it's not small talk, is it?
No.
It's delving deeper into your topic.
Yep.
Totally relatable. So I need novelty, but I need to be good at stuff as well. If I start something and I think I'm a bit rubbish at it, then I won't stick with it. And I think that's one of the reasons that we have so many abandoned side quests and projects. But like playing the bass, for instance, I started playing the bass when Jay was a baby, I think 12 years ago. But it's only this year that I've thought, actually, I'm going to dedicate enough time to getting good at it, rather than being able to play about two bass lines in a very basic way. And now I'm loving it, but it's hard to get past that. Now I want to do this, but it's hard. You can very easily think, sod that, and move on to something new. Oh, so we have a couple of people watching. We've got Patricia, who's in our Neurodivergent Speakers Network, saying morning. And we have Captain Kobe, whoop whoop, from your Berlin fanboy dopamine, Daniel. Hi, Daniel.
Hi, Daniel.
Oh, yeah, he's from the Neuro Queer Pride, I think. So, yeah,
love
brilliant.
That.
Great, we're going international. This is brilliant. that was a bit of a tangent. But when I discovered I was autistic, I'd been in an HR systems analyst role for 15 years. And as far as I was concerned, I enjoyed the job. It lent into my strengths, and I would stay there until I retired. But then I got even more interested in diversity and inclusion, to the extent where if I went to a diversity and inclusion meeting, anything related to that, and then went back to HR system support, it was just like, oh, boring, same old, same old. So I turned my side quest into my main mission. And I just hope I never get bored of that, or I'll have to go off down a tangent.
Well, you know, recently, what have I been doing, Charlie, with the e-learning?
I've gone
off on one.
You've kind of spread out in all directions.
Yeah.
So I read something the other day. You know, there's a really famous quote, I don't know word for word, from Dr. Ned Hallowell, who's ADHD expert on ADHD. And he wrote ADHD 2.0, which is my favourite book on the subject. But he said that it's like having a Ferrari brain and bicycle brakes. And so when you learn the sort of coping strategies for living with ADHD, you're learning how to use the brakes. But then I read somebody expanded on that, saying that the steering's a bit iffy as well. So this really rings true to me. I don't have a deficit of attention, but regulating it is a challenge, and applying myself to things that are boring as hell is impossible. Boredom is kryptonite to us.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So in my job, the main sort of, I think the main way that ADHD impacted me is putting off until never, never the stuff that was tedious, like anything to do with pensions. I worked in HR systems. Payroll is part of HR and you can't get away from it. But anything related to money and pensions and any of that, just mega tedious. So I don't
do any of that. Did you not notice, though, with being an ADHDer, I realised sometimes when I wasn't in the capacity where I was probably in more of a burnout state, that actually doing some of those novelty jobs, which were kind of repeating, I would go, right, I'm going to do that today. And I would get into a pattern of just doing that, of sending out these
fine with data entry. So, like, it's developing reports about pensions and cross-checking them and stuff. That was mega tedious. But if give me a project where there's some calculations or data entry to do, and I could churn through that, and it calmed my brain. So say I was having a wave of grief, or I'd been struggling with my PTSD, or I was overwhelmed for whatever reason, I would say to my manager, I'm not with it today. I'm not feeling it. I need a brain break. So I'm not going to do this big piece of work today. I'm going to help clear the queries out of the HR systems inbox. And so I would churn through a lot of queries and a lot of data entry, or do some calculations and input them into the HR system. And yeah, it really helped my brain. But then,
and I think you've just hit the nail on the head though, Charlie. It's about understanding how your brain works and then advocating for it, right? Yeah. It's about saying, actually, I can't do that thing today, but I can do something else.
Yeah,
so absolutely. As long as I'm communicating that and I understand that myself, and I think that's the real huge importance of when you're getting diagnosed with ADHD or you suspect you're ADHD, is actually working with your brain and not against it.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is why it's super important in the workplace that managers have that, they're vulnerable and approachable, and you can tell them, you've got the psychological safety to say what's going on with you and what's the best way to address it. And I always had that working in HR, because I knew, you know, I knew what the employment legislation was, I knew what our policies were, I knew how reasonable adjustment requests were turned around and things. And I had managers who weren't afraid to say, well, I struggle with this and that. So rather than pretending that they were perfect at everything, because that isn't a good way to build that psychological safety.
Nobody's perfect.
But then when we can lean into our strengths, then we can really do incredible, amazing things.
Absolutely.
And yeah, I love this permission to dream again that Angela talked about. And that's how I felt when I first started building up my business, Awesome Charlie Limited. I could start to think about how I can do things that are extremely satisfying to me and that make a difference to others, like it's a kind of calling. So I still go through life really people pleasing and volunteering to do all kinds of stuff until it pushes me to the point of overwhelm. But it helps me now that I know about the risk of getting overwhelmed, and I can sort of decide to set boundaries and put something on a back burner. So yeah, that's helped me with my creative outlets now, and I'm playing the bass and singing in my husband's band. So,
and I think one of the things I love about our neurodivergent community, anyone who's neurodivergent, we all have this lived core of being doing the right thing.
Yes.
And the values it brings. And I think actually if anybody could learn, and I did a talk once about the authenticity of kindness. Is kindness a selfish thing? Because I know for me it's not, because it comes from an authentic place, because I don't know any different as a neurodivergent person. But can kindness be selfish, as in it gives you something else if it's not genuine? Yeah. And I think there's a real massive interlink with that.
Yeah, absolutely. So any last thoughts on Angela's email? Should we move on to the second one?
Let's move on to the second one, shall we?
Thanks very much, Angela. I'll send you a video of me talking through that if you like, although I did make a couple of fumbles, but yeah, it's all good. Thank you.
Okay, so this one is for Nicola Jane Little, and I've been following Nicola actually for quite a while on LinkedIn.
Yeah, I know that name. Yeah.
Yeah, she connected with me. She sent me something and we connected, and we've never met. But I think the work that she does at the Hub is really inspiring. So she sent us in an email and she's put, firstly, thanks for the shout out, Ree Stories. Your podcast, we massively appreciate the work that you do. So that's to you as well, Charlie. I'd love to share my story, but fear I'd go on about 3 days. it would be a gazillion words long enough. So I'll put it in a summary. Late diagnosed ADHD and DCD, and awaiting autism diagnosis.
DCD is dyspraxia, isn't it? It used to be called. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I needed to do something positive with this knowledge. So I founded Celebrate Difference. And we've got 25 staff now doing a ton of different things. But interestingly, thing is, in 2017 to 2022, I worked with hundreds of self-employed entrepreneurs growing my business, number 9, and now in 2025, 40 to 50% of them have been diagnosed as ND. Question, what bound us together for years whilst none of us knew that we were, and now how we've come, we're still bouncing around together following this massive revolution in our lives. The power of having like-minded people in our lives who get it, who don't judge and don't have to explain yourself to, is underrated, is unrated. Underrated. Tony, put your teeth back in, I think. Anyway, I thought I'd drop you a line because it'd be great to connect, and I love what you guys are doing. And Nicola, she has, it's called celebratingdifference.co.uk, and she runs the hub, which is the Celebrating Difference Hub, where I know that she does a lot for ND individuals to go in and do some work. But again, absolutely, I actually do, it's again, I've talked to you about employer resource groups, right, in workplaces, and you're finding your community. That's what they're for.
Yeah,
it's for you to find people who experience the same things as you, maybe going through the same things as you, even if you're a parent of. And I think they're a huge asset in the workplace because, it's a different kind of support.
There's so many different things you can get out of those. So they can be a mutual support network, somewhere to let off steam, somewhere to get advice. Management could use it as a focus group for running decisions past, like at SRA, I was asked to be on the committee that was looking at the office refurb during the pandemic, and it's because I was the neurodiversity champion for the disability ERG. And there's so many things. They could run draft policies through us. So then it's that nothing about us without us.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and you find your community. So I, when I realised I was autistic and I found the actually autistic community on Twitter, that's when I thought, no, I'm not so weird and different. There are actually quite a lot of people with relatable experiences to me. And now it's the ADHD community. And yeah, we're all unique, but there are commonalities there. And especially, like, we've made a lot of friends with neurodivergent women, including ourselves. I can't even remember how we connected. I don't know if I met you on Facebook or LinkedIn or what, but I remember you asking me to be on a Neurodiversity Celebration Week live stream, and we just hit it off straight away.
Yeah. So
you can go through life feeling like you're never in an in crowd and that you're just the loner and the Billy No Mates, and then discover this fantastic community.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even when, like, when I was working in groups, when there was a team, I always felt like the outsider of the team, you know. And is it because I was ambitious? Is it because, you know, I was doing things right and ethically and would speak up when people wasn't, and I stood out for that? But actually, I'm glad I stood out for that. I'm glad that I was speaking my truth, but also speaking for anybody else that you may have been affecting as well. And when I look back at it, I actually felt really lonely and upset at the time of, oh, maybe I need to stop this because I, you know, I'm pushing myself out. Maybe I should be working within. But it didn't lie with who I was and that strong ability for justice kind of thing, right? So I look back and go, no, I don't regret it.
No.
Don't regret it at all.
Yeah, I love being a social justice warrior. I talk about this concept a bit because you can get really bogged down with all the injustice in the world. But there's this model where you look at your sphere of influence and you kind of ring fence the things that you want to get really invested in. And when you do the activism, like being part of the neurodiversity movement, you can sometimes shift that line and actually make a difference to large groups of people. And it's such an amazing feeling.
It really is. So just putting it out there, I can see, Charlie, you've just put that email address out there for the podcast. We really, really encourage, we've absolutely loved reading out Neuro Women stories. There is going to come, we are thinking about, aren't we, Charlie, having some guests
yeah.
on to come and join us. But if you want us to read out your story, please do email us on that email address, and we will endeavour to read out your stories. If you want to become a guest, please again reach out, and we're happy. We don't know when we're going to do that, but it's in the plans.
Yeah,
we'll contact.
Maybe if one of us is away on the first of the month, we get somebody to come and co-present, so that yep. it's not just our faces every day, although I know you love our faces and voices anyway.
I don't.
Especially not mine, anyway. My husband, yeah, really loves our accents.
Hi.
I know he's listening, he's my fan base of one.
Bless him. I love the fact that he listens every week when we're live. Yeah, and just, you know, we love connecting, we love sharing, and this is what this is about. This is not your, you know, your podcast to sit there and give people advice. It's about actually connecting, again, a bit about finding your community, right, and just sharing those stories that are connectable and relatable more than anything.
So people don't feel alone with not just their struggles but the joyous stuff as well.
Yeah.
I get quite a buzz out of my hobbies before they get dull, and yeah, brilliant. Okay, so we're almost at the half an hour, so let's wrap this up and get on with trying to survive the sweltering heat. And I need to head down to London to MC the Future is ND comedy night this evening. So if anyone's in London, we can do tickets too for the price of one if you want to bring a friend. And it's in an air-conditioned office. So
good luck with that. I'm gutted I'm missing it. I am. Yeah. I can't do London in 2 days. I can't do tonight and tomorrow. My social battery would be gone before I did my round table tomorrow.
Cool. Okay. Thanks all.
Brilliant. Thanks, everyone.
Bye.